6. Don Lorenzo Salvara stepped out of the temple portico into the stark, bright dampness of high Camori noon, little imagining the education a certain boy thief was receiving in the concept of too clever by half just across the district. The trilling of watch whistles sounded faintly. Salvara narrowed his eyes and peered with some curiosity at the distant figure of a lone city watchman, stumbling across the cobbles and occasionally bouncing off walls, clutching his head as though afraid it was going to float off his neck and up into the sky.
"Can you believe it, my lord?"
Conte had already brought the horses around from the temple's unobtrusive little stabling grotto.
"Drunk as a baby in a beer barrel, and not a heartbeat past noon. Fucking pissant lot of softies, these new golden rods."
Conte was a sun-wrinkled man of middle years, with the waistline of a professional dancer and the arms of a professional oarsman. The manner in which he served the young Don was obvious even without a glance at the pair of thigh-length stilettos hanging from his crossed leather belts.
"Hardly up to your old standards, eh?"
The Don, on the other hand, was a well-favoured young man of the classic Camori blood, black-haired, with skin like shadowed honey. His face was heavy and soft with curves, though his body was slender, and only his eyes gave any hint that he wasn't a polite young collegium undergraduate masquerading as a noble. Behind his fashionable rimless optics, the Don had eyes like an impatient archer hungry for targets. Conte snorted.
"In my day, at least we knew that getting shit-faced was an indoor hobby."
Conte passed the Don the reins of his mount, a sleek grey mare little bigger than a pony, well-trained but certainly not gentled. Just the thing for short trots around a city still more friendly to boats, or acrobats, as Doña Salvara often complained, than to horses. The stumbling watchman vanished around a distant corner, vaguely in the direction of the urgent whistling. As it seemed to be coming no closer, Salvara shrugged inwardly and led his horse out into the street. Here the day's second curiosity burst upon them in all of its glory. As the Don and his man turned to their right, they gained a full view of the high-walled alley beside the Temple of Fortunate Waters, and in this alley two finely dressed men were clearly getting their lives walloped out of them by a pair of bravos. Salvara froze and stared in wonder. Masked thugs in the temple district? Masked thugs strangling a man dressed all in black, in the tight, heavy, miserably inappropriate fashion of a Vajran? And, merciful 12, a gentled packhorse was simply standing there, taking it all in. After a handful of seconds lost to sheer amazement, the Don let his own horse's reins go and ran toward the mouth of the alley. He didn't need to glance sideways to know that Conte was barely astride behind him, knives out.
"You!"
The Don's voice was reasonably confident, though high with excitement.
"Unhand these men and stand clear!"
The closest footpad snapped his head around. His dark eyes widened above his improvised mask when he saw the Don and Conte approaching. The thug shifted his red-faced victim so that the man's body was between himself and the would-be interlopers.
"No need to trouble yourself with this business, my lord," the footpad said. "Just a bit of a disagreement. Private matter."
"Then perhaps you should have conducted it somewhere less public."
The footpad sounded quite exasperated.
"What? The Duke give you this alley to be your estate? Take another step and I break this poor bastard's neck."
"You just do that."
Don Salvara settled his hand suggestively on the pommel of his basket-hilted rapier.
"My man and I appear to command the only way out of this alley. I'm sure you'll still feel quite pleased at having killed that man when you've got 3 feet of steel in your throat."
The first footpad didn't release his hold on the coiled loops of rope that were holding up his barely conscious victim, but he began to back off warily toward the dead end, dragging the black-clad man clumsily with him. His fellow thugs stood away from the prone form of the man he'd been savagely kicking. A meaningful look flashed between the two masked bandits.
"My friends, do not be stupid."
Salvara slid his rapier halfway out of its scabbard, Sunlight blazed white on finest Camorri steel, and Conte crouched forward on the balls of his feet, shifting to the predatory stance of a knife fighter born and trained. Without another word, the first footpad flung his victim straight at Conte and the Don. While the unfortunate black-clad fellow gasped and clutched at his rescuers, the two masked thugs bolted for the wall at the rear of the alley. Conte sidestepped the heaving, shuddering Vardran and dashed after them, but the assailants were spry as well as cunning. A slim rope hung down the wall, barely visible, and knotted at regular intervals. The two thugs scrambled up this and all but dove over the top of the wall. Conte and his blades were 2 seconds too late. The weighted far end of the rope flew back over the wall and landed with a splat in the crusted muck at his feet.
"Fucking useless slugabed bastards!"
The Don's man slid his stilettos back into his belt with easy familiarity and bent down to the heavy-set body lying unmoving in the muck. The eerie white stare of the gentled packhorse seemed to follow him as he pressed fingers to the fat man's neck, seeking a pulse.
"Watchmen stumbling drunk in broad daylight, and look what happens in the bloody temple district while they screw around!" "Oh, thank the marrows!"
choked out the black-clad man as he uncoiled the rope from his neck and flung it to the ground. Don Salvara could now see that his clothes were very fine, despite their spattering of muck and their unseasonable weight. Excellently cut, form-tailored, and ornamented with expensive subtlety rather than opulent flash.
"Thank the salt and thank the sweet. Thank the hands beneath the waters those bastards attacked us right beside this place of power, where the currents brought you to our aid."
The man's Therin was precise, though heavily accented, and his voice was unsurprisingly hoarse. He massaged his abraded throat, blinked, and began to pat the muck around him with his free hand, as though looking for something.
"I believe I can help you again," said Don Salvara in his best Vardran, which was as precise and as heavily accented as the stranger's Therin.
Salvara picked a pair of pearl-rimmed optics out of the muck, noting their light weight and sturdy construction, a superior and very expensive pair indeed, and wiped them off on the sleeve of his own loose scarlet coat before handing them to the man.
"And you speak Vardran?"
The stranger spoke in that tongue now, with the clipped, excitable diction of Emberlane. He slid the optics back over his eyes and blinked up at his rescuer.
"A complete miracle now! Far more than I have any right to pray for! Oh, Grauman!"
The black-clad Vardran scrambled unsteadily to his feet and stumbled over to his companion. Conte had managed to roll the portly stranger over in the slime. He now lay on his back, with his great muck-slick chest rising and falling steadily.
"He lives, obviously."
Conte slid his hands along the poor fellow's ribcage and stomach.
"I don't believe he has anything broken or ruptured, though he'll likely be green with bruises for weeks. Green as pond water, then black as night, or I don't know shit from custard tarts."
The slender, well-dressed Vardran let out a long sigh of relief.
"Custard tarts, indeed. The marrows are most generous. Grauman is my attendant, my secretary, my diligent right hand. Alas, he has no skill at arms, but then I am myself plainly embarrassed in that regard."
The stranger now spoke Therin again, and he turned to stare at Don Salvara with wide eyes.
"Just as plainly I do you discourtesy, for you must be one of the Dons of Camor."
He bowed low, lower even than etiquette would require of a landed foreigner greeting a peer of the serene duchy of Camor, almost until he was in danger of pitching forward on his chin.
"I am Lucas Fairwhite, servant to the House of Bel Oster, of the Canton of Emberlane and the Kingdom of the Seven Marrows. I am entirely at your service and grateful beyond words for what you have done for me today."
"I am a Lorenzo, Don Salvara, and this is my man Conte, and it is we who are entirely at your service without obligation."
The Don bowed at exactly the correct angle, with his right hand held out as an invitation to shake.
I am in a sense responsible for Camor's hospitality, and what befell you here was not hospitality. It was upon my honour to come to your aid.
Fairwhite grasped the Don's proffered arm just above the wrist and shook. If Fairwhite's grasp was weak, the Don was willing to charitably ascribe it to his near strangling. Fairwhite then lowered his own forehead until it gently touched the back of the Don's hand, and their physical courtesies were settled.
I beg to differ. You have here a sworn man, quite competent by his looks. You could have satisfied honour by sending him to our aid, yet you came yourself, ready to fight. From where I stood, it seemed he ran to keep up with you, and I assure you my viewpoint for this affair was uncomfortable but excellent.
The Don waved his hand gently, as though words could be swatted out of the air.
I'm just sorry they got away, Master Fairwhite. It is unlikely that I can give you true justice. For that, Camor again apologizes.
Fairwhite knelt down beside Grauman and brushed the big man's sweat-slick dark hair back from his forehead.
Justice? I am lucky to be alive. I was blessed with a safe journey here, and with your aid, I am alive to continue my mission, and that is justice enough.
The slender man looked up at Salvara again.
Are you not Don Salvara of the Nakotsa Vineyards? Is not the Doña Sofia, the famous botanical alchemist, your wife?
I have that honor, and I have that pleasure, said the Don.
And do you not serve the House of Bel Oster? Do you not deal with the,
Yes, oh yes, I serve that House of Bel Oster. My business is the sale and transport of the substance you're thinking of. It is curious, so very curious. The marrows toy with me. The hands beneath must wish me to drop dead of sheer wonder. That you should save my life here, that you should speak Vadran, that we should share a common business interest, it is uncanny.
I too find it extraordinary, but hardly displeasing.
Don Salvara gazed around the alley thoughtfully.
My mother was Vadran, which is why I speak the language enthusiastically, if poorly.
Were you followed here? That rope over the wall bespeaks preparation, and the temple district... Well, it's usually as safe as the Duke's own reading room.
We arrived this morning, said Fairwhite, after we secured our rooms at the Inn of the Tumble Home. You know of it, I'm sure. We came straight here to give thanks and drown the offerings for our safe passage from Emberlane. I did not see where those men came from.
Fairwhite mused for a moment.
Though I believe that one of them threw that rope over the wall after knocking Grauman down. They were cautious, but not waiting in ambush for us.
Salvara grunted and turned his attention to the blank stare of the gentled horse.
Curious. Do you always bring horses and goods to the temple to make your offerings? If those packs are as full as they look, I can see why thugs might have been tempted.
Ordinarily, such things would be under lock and key at our inn.
Fairwhite gave Grauman two friendly pats on the shoulder and rose again.
But for this cargo and for this mission, I must keep them with me at all times. And I fear that must have made us a tempting target. It is a conundrum.
Fairwhite scratched his chin slowly several times.
I am in your debt already, Don Lorenzo, and hesitant to ask aid of you once again. Yet this relates to the mission I am charged with for my time in Camor. As you are a Don, do you know of a certain Don Jacobo?
Don Salvara's eyes fixed firmly on Fairwhite, one corner of his mouth turned infinitesimally downward.
Yes, he said, and nothing more.
After the silence had stretched a few moments.
This Don Jacobo, it is said that he is a man of wealth, extreme wealth, even for a Don.
That is true.
It is said that he is adventurous, bold even, that he has, how do you say it, an eye for strange opportunities, a toleration of risk.
That is one way of describing his character, perhaps.
Fairwhite licked his lips.
Don Lorenzo, it is important, if these things are true, could you, through your status as a peer of Camor, assist me in securing an appointment with Don Jacobo? I am ashamed to ask, but I would be more ashamed to forswear my mission for the House of Bel Oster.
Don Salvara smiled without the slightest hint of humor, and turned his head for several seconds, as though to gaze down at Grauman, lying quietly in the muck. Conte had stood up and was staring directly at his Don, eyes wide.
"Master Fairwhite," said the Don at last, "are you not aware that Paleri Jacobo is perhaps my greatest living enemy? That the two of us have fought to the blood twice, and only on the orders of Duke Nicovante himself do we not settle our affair for all time?"
"Oh," said Fairwhite, with the tone and facial expression of a man who has just dropped a torch in a hogshead cask of lamp oil.
"How awkward! How stupid of me! I have done business in Camor several times, but I did not... I have insulted you. I have asked too much."
"Hardly." Salvara's tone grew warm again. He began to drum the fingers of his right hand against the hilt of his rapier. "But you're here on a mission for the House of Bel Oster. You carry a cargo that you refuse to let out of your sight. You clearly have your plan fixed upon Don Jacobo in some fashion, though you still need to gain a formal audience with him. So, to be clear, he doesn't know you're here, or that you plan on seeking him out, does he?"
I fear to say too much of my business."
"Yet your business here is plain," said Don Salvara, now positively cheerful. "And have you not repeatedly stated that you are indebted to me, Master Fairwhite? Despite my assurances to the contrary, have you not refused those assurances? Do you withdraw your promise of obligation now?"
With the best will in the world, my lord."
"Damn!"
Fairwhite sighed and clenched his fists.
"I am ashamed, Don Lorenzo. I must now either forswear my obligation to the man who saved my life, or forswear my promise to the House of Bel Oster to keep its business as private as possible."
"You must do neither," said the Don. "And perhaps I can aid you directly in the pursuit of your master's business. Do you not see? If Don Jacobo does not know of your presence here, what obligation do you have to him? Clearly you are set here upon business. A plan, a scheme, a proposal of some sort. You're here to initiate something, or else you'd have your connections already in place. Don't be angry with yourself. This is all plain logic. Is it not true?"
Fairwhite looked down and nodded reluctantly.
"Then here it is. Although I am not as wealthy as Don Jacobo, I am a man of substantial means, and we are in complementary lines of business, are we not? Attend me tomorrow on my barge at the Shifting Revel. Make your proposal to me. Let us discuss it thoroughly."
There was a wicked gleam in Don Salvara's eyes. It could be seen despite the brightness of the sun overhead.
"As you are indebted to me, repay this obligation by agreeing only to attend. Then, free of obligation, let us discuss business to our mutual advantage. Do you not see that I have a vested interest in taking whatever opportunity you present away from Jacobo, even if he never learns of it? Especially if he never learns of it. And am I not bold enough for your tastes? I swear your face grows longer as though by sorcery. What's wrong?"
"It is not you, Don Lorenzo. It is merely that the hands beneath are suddenly too generous once more. We have a saying that undeserved good fortune always conceals a snare. Don't worry, Master Fairwhite. If it's really business that you want to discuss, never doubt that there will be hard work and bitter troubles enough waiting for us down the road. Are we in agreement, then? Will you dine with me tomorrow morning, take in the shifting revel, and discuss your proposal with me? Fairwhite swallowed, looked Don Salvara in the eyes, and nodded firmly. There is great sense in what you propose, and perhaps great opportunity for both of us. I will accept your hospitality, and I will tell you everything. Tomorrow, as you say. It cannot come soon enough for me. It has been my pleasure to make your acquaintance, Master Fairwhite. Don Salvara inclined his head. May we help your friend up out of the muck and see you to your inn to ensure you have no further difficulties? Your company would be most pleasing if only you would wait and look after poor Grauman and our cargo long enough for me to finish my offering within the temple. Locke removed a small leather pack from the horse's jumble of goods and containers. The offering will be more substantial than I had planned. But then, my masters understand that prayers of thanks are an unavoidable expense in our line of business.
7. The journey back to the Tumble home was slow, with Jean putting on an excellent show of misery, grogginess, and confusion. If the sight of two mud-splattered, overdressed outlanders and three horses escorted by a don struck anyone as unusual, they kept their comments to themselves and reserved their stares for Don Salvara's back. Along the way, they passed Carlo, now walking about casually in the plain garb of a labourer. He flashed rapid and subtle hand signals. With no sign of bug, he would take up position at one of their prearranged rendezvous sites. And he would pray.
Lucas! Surely it can't be! I say, Lucas Fairwhite!
As Carlo vanished into the crowd, Galdo appeared just as suddenly, dressed in the bright silks and cottons of a prosperous Camorri merchant. His slashed and ruffled coat alone was probably worth as much as the barge the gentleman bastards had poled up the river that morning. There was nothing now about him to remind the Don or his man of the alley cutthroats. Unmasked, with his hair slicked back under a small round cap, Galdo was the very picture of physical and fiscal respectability. He twirled a little lacquered cane and stepped toward Don Lorenzo's odd little party, smiling broadly.
"Why, Evante!"
Locke, as Fairwhite, stopped and stared in mock astonishment, then held out a hand for a vigorous shake from the newcomer.
"What a pleasant surprise!"
"Quite, Lucas, quite. But what the hell's happened to you? And to you, Grauman? You look as though you just lost a fight."
"Ah, we did."
Locke looked down and rubbed his eyes.
"Evante, it has been a very peculiar morning. Grau and I might not even be alive if not for our rather extraordinary guide here."
Pulling Galdo toward him, Locke held a hand out toward the Don.
"My Lord Salvara, may I introduce you to Evante Ecari, a solicitor of your Razona district? Evante, this is Don Lorenzo Salvara, of the Nacozza Vineyards, if you still pay attention to those properties."
12 gods!
Galdo swept his hat off and bowed deeply at the waist.
"A Don, I should have recognized you immediately, my lord. 1,000 pardons. Evante Ecari, entirely at your service."
"A pleasure, Master Ecari."
Don Salvara bowed correctly but casually, then stepped forward to shake the newcomer's hand. This signaled his permission to deduct any superfluous bowing and scraping from the conversation.
You know Master Fairwhite, then?"
"Lucas and I go well back, my lord."
Without turning his back on Don Salvara, he fussily brushed a bit of dried muck from the shoulders of Locke's black coat.
"I work out of Miraggio's, mostly, handling customers and license work for our friends in the north. Lucas is one of Bel Oster's best and brightest."
"Hardly."
Locke coughed and smiled shyly.
Evante takes all the more interesting laws and regulations of your state and reduces them to plain Therin. He was my salvation on several previous ventures. I seem to have a talent for finding snares in Camor, and a talent for finding good Camori to slip me out of them. Few clients would describe what I do in such generous terms. But what's this mud and these bruises? You said something of a fight? Yes, your city has some very enterprising thieves. Don Salvara and his man have just driven a pair of them off. I fear Grauman and I were getting the worst of the affair. Galdo stepped over to Jean and gave him a friendly pat on the back. Jean's wince was fantastic theater. My compliments, my lord Salvara. Lucas is what you might call a good vintage, even if he's not wise enough to take off those silly winter wools. I'm most deeply obligated to you for what you've done, and I'm at... Hardly, sir, hardly. Don Salvara held up one hand and hitched the other in his sword belt. I did what my position demanded, no more. And I have too many promises of obligation being thrown at me already this afternoon. Don Lorenzo and Master Ecari fenced pleasantries for a few moments thereafter. Galdo eventually let himself be skewered with the politest possible version of thanks but piss off. Well, he said at last, this has been a wonderful surprise, but I'm afraid I have a client awaiting, and clearly, my lord Salvara, you and Lucas have business that I shouldn't intrude upon. With your permission? Of course. A pleasure, Master Ecari. Entirely mine, I assure you, my lord. Lucas, if you get a spare hour, you know where to find me, and should my poor skills be of any use to your affairs, you know I'll come running. Of course, Evante. Locke grasped Galdo's right hand in both of his and shook enthusiastically. I suspect we may have need of you sooner rather than later. He laid a finger alongside his nose. Galdo nodded, and then there was a general exchange of bows and handshakes and the other courtesies of disentanglement. As Galdo hurried away, he left a few hand signals in his wake, disguised as adjustments to his hat. I know nothing about Bug. Going to look around. Don Salvara stared after him thoughtfully for a few seconds, then turned back to Locke as their small party resumed its journey toward the tumble home. They made small talk for a while. Locke had little trouble, as Fairite, letting his pleasure at seeing Ecari slip. Soon he was projecting a very real downcast mood, which he claimed to be an incipient headache from the attempted strangling. Don Salvara and Conte left the two gentlemen bastards in front of the tumble home's street-side citrus gardens, with admonitions to rest soundly that night and let all business wait for the morrow. No sooner were Locke and Jean safely alone in their suite, the harness full of precious goods thrown back over Jean's shoulders, then they were exploding out of their muddy finery and donning new disguises so they could hurry off to their own rendezvous points to wait for word of Bug, if any was forthcoming. This time, the swift dark shape that flitted silently from rooftop to rooftop in their wake went entirely unnoticed. 8. Fading false light. The hangman's wind and the swamp water mist glued clothes to skin and rapidly congealed Carlo and Galdo's tobacco smoke around them, half cloaking them in a cataract of greyness. The twins sat, hooded and sweating, in the locked doorway of a fairly well-kept pawn shop on the northern tip of the old citadel district. The shop was shuttered and barred for the evening. The keeper's family was obviously drinking something with a merry kick two floors above them. It was a good first touch, said Carlo. It was, wasn't it? Our best yet. Hard to work all those disguises, what with us being the handsome ones. I confess that I wasn't aware we shared that complication. Now, don't be hard on yourself. Physically, you're quite my match. It's my scholarly gifts you lack, and my easy fearlessness, and my gift for women. If you mean the ease with which you drop coins when you're off a-cunting, you're right.
You're a one-man charity ball for the whores of Camor.
Now that, said Carlo, was genuinely unkind.
You're right.
The twins smoked in silence for a few seconds.
I'm sorry. Some of the savour's out of it tonight. The little bastard has my stomach twisted in knots. You saw...
Extra foot patrols. Pissed off. Yeah. Heard the whistles. I'm real curious about what he did and why he did it.
He must have had his reasons. If it really was a good first touch, he gave it to us. I hope he's well enough for us to beat the piss out of him.
Stray shapes hurried past in the backlit mist. There was very little elder glass on the old citadel island, so most of the dying glow poured through from a distance. The sound of a horse's hooves on cobbles was coming from the south and getting louder. At that moment, Locke was no doubt skulking near the Palace of Patience, eyeballing the patrols coming and going across the Black Bridge, making sure that they carried no small familiar prisoners or small familiar bodies. Jean would be off at another rendezvous point, pacing and cracking his knuckles. Bug would never return straight to the Temple of Perelandro, nor would he go near the tumble home. The older gentleman bastards would sit their vigils for him out in the city and the steam. Wooden wheels clattered, and an annoyed animal whinnied. The sound of the horse-drawn cart came to a creaking halt not 20 feet from the Sansa brothers, shrouded in the mist.
Evendando?
A loud but uncertain voice spoke the name. Carlo and Galdo leapt to their feet as one. Evendando was their private recognition signal for an unplanned rendezvous.
Here!
Carlo cried, dropping his thin cigarette and forgetting to step on it. A man materialized out of the mist, bald and bearded, with the heavy arms of a working artisan and the rounded middle of moderate prosperity.
I dunno exactly how this works, the man said, but if one of you is Evendando, I was told I'd have 10 solons for delivering this here cask to this, doorway.
He jerked a thumb over his shoulder toward the cart.
Cask, indeed!
Garlo fumbled with a coin purse, heart racing.
What's, in this cask?
Ain't wine, said the stranger. Ain't a very polite lad, neither. But 10 silvers is what he promised.
Of course,
Galdo counted rapidly, slapping bright silver discs down into the man's open palm.
10 for the cask, 1 more for forgetting all about this, hm?
Holy hell! My memory must be cacked out because I can't remember what you're paying me for.
Good man.
Galdo slipped his purse back under his nightcloak and ran to help Carlo, who had mounted the cart and was standing over a wooden cask of moderate size. The cork stopper that would ordinarily be set into the top of the barrel was gone, leaving a small dark air hole. Carlo rapped sharply on the cask 3 times. 3 faint taps came right back. With grins on their faces, the Sansa twins muscled the cask down off the cart and nodded farewell to the driver. The man remounted his cart and soon vanished into the night, whistling, his pockets jingling with more than 20 times the value of the empty cask.
Well,
Carlo said when they'd rolled the cask back to the shelter of their doorway,
this vintage is probably a little young and rough for decanting. Put it in the cellar for 50 or 60 years? I was thinking we might just pour it in the river.
Really?
Galdo drummed his fingers on the cask. What's the river ever done to deserve that?
There was a series of noises from inside the cask that sounded vaguely like some sort of protest. Carlo and Galdo leaned down by the air hole together.
Now, Bug, Carlo began, I'm sure you have a perfectly good explanation for why you're in there and why we're out here worrying ourselves sick over you. It's a magnificent explanation, really.
Bug's voice was hoarse and echoed faintly.
You're going to love it. But first, tell me how the game went.
It was a thing of beauty, said Galdo. 3 weeks tops, and we're going to own this Don down to his wife's last set of silk small clothes. added Carlo. The boy groaned with obvious relief.
Great! Well, what happened was, there was this pack of yellow jackets heading right for you. What I did to distract them pissed them off pretty fierce, so I ran for this Cooper's that I know in Old Citadel. He does business with some of the wine places upriver, so he's got this yard of barrels just sitting around. Well, I just sort of invited myself in, jumped in one, and told him that if I could stay there until he delivered me here after false light, there'd be 8 solons in it for him.
8? Carlo scratched his chin. The cheeky bastard just asked for 10 and got 11.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
Bug coughed.
I got bored sitting around the cask yard, so I lifted his purse. Had about 2 solons worth of copper in it. So we got some back.
I was going to say something sympathetic about you lying around inside a cask for half the day, said Galdo. But that was a damn silly thing to do.
Oh, come on.
Bug sounded genuinely stung.
He thought I was in the cask the whole time, so why would he suspect me? And you just gave him a load of money, so why would he suspect you? It's perfect. Locke would appreciate it.
Bug, Carlo said, Locke is like a brother to us, and our love for him has no bounds. But the 4 most fatal words in the Therin language are, Locke would appreciate it. Rivaled only by Locke taught me a new trick, added Galdo. The only person who gets away with Locke Lamora games is Locke Lamora. Because we think the gods are saving him up for a really big death, something with knives and hot irons, and 50,000 cheering spectators. The brothers cleared their throats in unison.
Well, Bug said finally, I did it and I got away with it. Can we go home now?
Home, Carlo mused. Sure. Locke and Jean are going to sob over you like grandmothers when they find out you're alive, so let's not keep them waiting.
No need to get out. Your legs are probably cramped up, said Galdo.
They are, Bug squeaked. But you 2 really don't need to carry me all that way.
You've never been more right about anything in your entire life, Bug.
Galdo took up position at one side of the cask and nodded at Carlo. Whistling in unison, the 2 brothers began rolling the cask along the cobbles, steering for the temple district, not necessarily by the fastest or smoothest route available.